Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here, where...
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. I'm your Storytelling Hour host, Fanny Crawford.
And I'm your co-host, Stash Ziolkowski.
And we're glad you're with us. We're part of the Enlightened Radio team, and today is October 7th. And our theme today is...
Our theme today is we're going to do... an old story that's attributed to
Ray Bradbury.
And it was recommended to me and to Fanny.
Except I don't remember.
She didn't remember that it was by Jim May, who we did a workshop with and who was a good friend. And he told me about it because I was looking for something that Fanny Crawford and I could do on the radio, and he told me that he had done this in the past. So I looked it up, and we have copies, and we're going to do this. We're also going to talk about some storytelling things that are exciting coming up in our life, but that are really happened this past weekend, and you'll hear about it.
Okay.
Yes, in retrospect.
Okay, and we want to thank Andy Offit-Irwin for giving us permission to use Tarry Here, our opening song. Thank you to a fine storyteller and singer-songwriter, musician, all-around fine person. And do you want to talk about Speak?
Sure. Speak Story Series. Actually, tomorrow, October the 8th, is... the next Speak performance. Tim Tingle and Oklahoma Choctaw. Yay, got it right. Award-winning author and storyteller. And he has written children's books. And he does lots of things, including play a native flute and drum and tell stories all over. He has told stories at the Kennedy Center, the Library of Congress, and the National Museum of the American Indian. So that's tomorrow, October 8th. And in the morning, he will be going to Ranson Elementary and doing two programs there for the younger children. In November, November 12th, Bill Harley, singer, songwriter. He's won a Grammy. In fact, he's won two Grammys. I think that's a funny word, a Grammy.
I had a Grammy once. And a grandpa.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That's funny. I'm sure he could do something with that.
I'm sure.
Bill's very humorous. Anyway, he was a big hit last year when he was here in at Shepherdstown, West Virginia, at Shepherd University. And I'm sure we'll have a packed house for those two gentlemen that will close out the series.
Time's a-flying. We are almost to the end of the current season.
There are lots of things that are ending soon.
Yes, there are. Right. And it's almost a time for new beginnings as well.
But. Yes. Right.
So do you want to jump right into Ray Bradbury's story?
Except you just spurred something in my brain.
Yes.
A good friend of mine that I've done theater with in the past and who now lives in Florida, but who stopped by our house when he was on a trip, and he and his girlfriend stopped by the house, and we had a nice bit of memories. Just told me that he is going to be a grandfather, and he wanted to know what people of Polish origin call grandfathers.
And you told him.
And I told him. I wrote the word correctly in the correct spelling, and then I wrote it phonetically. Because I'm called Jaji, and that means grandfather in Polish. And then he wanted, and then he asked me for what you call grandma. And that's an interesting thing in America. In Poland, grandmothers are called babcia. In America, grandmothers are sometimes called babcia, but it's more frequently grandmothers are called busha or bushi. And according to some places of information, there are some communities where there is an ongoing argument, and has been for a number of years, about the correct word for grandmother. Apparently, they've all accepted Jaji for grandfather, but grandmother, the strict Poles want it to be babcia. And so
where did Bushi come from?
I'm not sure, but all my life, grandmothers have been called Bushi. And some people even said Busha, but, my mother was a Bushi, my sister was a Bushi, and everybody now. And lots of people have their own names for grandmother.
Sure.
My wife is Gigi.
I saw Gigi online this morning, but I did get confused because I was thinking you were Gigi, but that's not what the picture showed.
my wife, and the reason she's called Gigi is because our first grandchild is Grace, and she's Grace's grandmother. And so when she said that out loud the first time, she said, oh, I'm going to ask her to call me Gigi, because I think that's wonderful. And I had a silver pin made for her. It's in script. It says Gigi. So, and then we found since then, our Grace is 9 years old. So over the years, we found that there are a lot of women who are called Gigi by their grandchildren. And, I think that's a nice name. But they're all kind of, Mammy. Things like that.
Mm-hmm.
For grandfathers, people call them pop-pop.
Nonna in Italian.
In Italian?
Mm-hmm.
What would they call it?
Nonna. I have a friend who's a Nonna.
Nonna, right.
Yeah.
Right. And and my one son-in-law has taught his daughter, Zia, to call me Grandpa Jaji Stash.
That's a mouthful.
That is.
Okay. So are we ready now?
I think we are.
Okay. Are you going to do the title and then I will start? Or how?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, the title is Old Fashioned Lime Vanilla Ice.
By Ray Bradbury.
Right.
The girl came into the parlor, a quiet storm of lavender and dawn, her loose, auburn ponytail flowing down her blue and tiny white polka dot dress, like a melted copper river flowing across the night sky. She stood in her black ankle-strapped flats and looked seriously at the list of ice creams, one finger against her lips in thought. Oh, she said, I think I'll have the old-fashioned lime vanilla ice. I like old-fashioned things.
The man behind the counter, in his red and white striped shirt, complete with white arm garters and white suspenders, holding up his white pants, was equally serious as he bent to the task, carefully rolling out two small scoops into a small china bowl. She paid and turned around, looking to sit. In the corner sat a man, side on to her, facing out the window. Young lady, you are a person of taste and imagination. Also, you have the willpower of 10 men. Otherwise, you would not dare veer away from the common flavors listed on the menu and order straight out, without quibble or reservation, such an unheard-of thing as lime vanilla ice.
What do you mean by that?
It is very brave to order lime vanilla in a chocolate world, he replied, still not facing her as she walked over.
What an extraordinary and rare thing to say. I bet nobody has ever said those words.
Or only said them once before.
Imagine, a sentence that has never been spoken before. That has to be the rarest thing.
Or maybe the second rarest.
What could be rarer?
Why, the most commonly ever said thing, but with meaning. So that every time you said it, it was like it had never, ever been said before, because it never had.
And what would that be?
Why, I love you, of course.
She sat down. What if lime, vanilla, in a chocolate world had been said before, but only once?
Like a quote?
Or a code, so that if the person had heard it before and heard it again, they would know whom they were talking to. Maybe they had suspicions before, but at that very moment, once they heard it, they would know exactly and forever that this was the one and only very person who had said that same thing before.
Déjà entendu?
Exactly.
He asked, how would a person know to be in the right place at the right time to say the right thing to the right listener?
They could roam around forever hoping to find that person and say just that one thing. She looked out the window in the direction he was gazing.
Or they could say it to everybody they meet.
They both laughed, him still looking out the window. Or they could stay in one place, a place they thought that the other person might be drawn to, and wait and wait and wait to say what must be said.
Just then, a restored trolley passed by the window, going exactly the speed you go when you have no particular destination, but still must be moving on. It went clang, clangety clang, and passed out of view as if it had driven off of a movie screen. He did not move his head to watch it go.
She took a delicate spoonful of her ice. And what would draw that person? Something that maybe once you could get everywhere, but now you can't get anywhere, so you searched and searched for it, but didn't even know you were searching until you found it.
Like a sentence everybody says, but only a few really mean.
The vagaries of a chocolate world. Verily, but how do you know this person wouldn't just give up and become a chocolate fiend, a mocha chip debutante, a Rocky Road convert?
It does not roll off the tongue to say, Rocky Road is very brave in a vanilla world.
Is that all?
No. To wait for this person is to know she has a true heart, and true hearts do not change.
Ever?
Never.
Are you sure?
Very.
How long would you wait?
One lifetime, maybe two, possibly all of them.
What if she had stayed in one place to make her own lime vanilla ice and wait for you?
Her heart is true, but free. She's not the stay and wait kind of girl.
Oh?
I imagined her in Paris and Tokyo and Sydney.
But you are not there.
I was there, but I was afraid I would miss her, that she would be some place I hadn't been to, or just left the place I was. I went here and there looking and looking. Then I realized that what I sought could not be found, that being alone anywhere is like being alone at home. So I came back. He tilted his head back as if reading from a page only he could see. We shall not cease from exploration, and the end of all exploring will be to arrive where we started and know the place for the first time.
She replied, through the unknown, unremembered gate, when the last of earth left to discover is that which was the beginning, at the source of the longest river, the voice of the hidden waterfall, and the children in the apple tree.
He raised his eyebrow. You know you're Eliot.
What you sought could not be found, she said, undeterred.
No, for it was her who must do the finding of that thing which she does not know she is seeking.
What does she seek?
That one thing that everybody says.
But nobody means.
Until somebody says it for the first time.
You waited for me. Was it hard?
Not very.
Did you have a family? Did Did you die young?
I managed it.
Did it hurt?
Not as much as the living did. Do you think that is terrible of me?
No. I think every love has a lifetime, and that love had that lifetime. She took another spoonful of the ice cream. Tell me a story.
I fell off a cliff once and got caught in a tree halfway down.
Oh, when was that?
We'll find out the rest of this story after a station break.
You're listening to the Enlighten Radio Storytelling Hour on the Enlighten Radio.org internet radio station broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. And your two tellers, actors this afternoon are Fanny Crawford, me.
And Stash Siolkowski, me.
I'm so glad it was you.
Yes.
And we're performing Ray Bradbury's short story called Old Fashioned Lime Vanilla Ice.
Yes.
Highly recommended by Jim May, yes, storyteller.
Right. And so we take recommendations from people who know what they're talking about. Especially when they've been doing this kind of thing far longer than we have, or even dreamed of it, probably.
Is it time for me to make an announcement about stories in the round?
I think so.
Okay, this would be a good time to do that. The storytelling series, Stories in the Round, that I coordinate in Hagerstown, Maryland, will have its October performance on the 21st, the third Monday this month of October, with Dovey Thomason, Lakota Apache Scots legacy teller. She tells traditional tales from those traditions and also tells personal stories. And we're looking forward to having her be there at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Hagerstown at 13245 Searfoss Pike, just a mile west of the city limits on Route 58. 7 p.m. in the evening on October 21st. And after that, we have two more sessions, November 25th with Mitch Capel, who, well, I'm guessing he's going to do some Paul Laurence Dunbar and probably some personal stories as well. But you should know, he is one of the two funniest storytellers, male storytellers, performing in the United States today by my count. By my vote. And then on December 23rd, Fanny Crawford will be performing. And I have no idea what she is going to do, but I guess we'll find out.
And she'll be wonderful, whatever she does.
And if you want more information about any of those tellers or what's happened in the past season, the beginning of season six, because we're almost to the end of season six of Stories in the Round, you can call me at 301-730-1638 or email me at Fanitsky, F-A-N-I-T-S-K-Y, at hotmail.com. And tickets are $10 in advance or $12 at the door.
And it's a good idea to call ahead.
Absolutely.
And that way you'll save $2 and you'll make the people who work at the door, you'll make their life so much easier.
Indeed. Okay. Do we have any other announcements before we move on?
I'm not sure. Let's see. Oh, I was going to ask a question. Have you had Mitch Capel at
Stories in the Round?
Stories Around before?
No, but I've heard him tell three times at NAPS, at the National Association of Black Storytellers Conference. Yeah. And he's really, really funny. He's just a great raconteur. He also does stand-up comedy, and he travels around the country and out of the country as an airline employee. So I've heard other storytellers express some envy of his dual vocation, because it certainly makes it easier to perform if you can get there.
That's right, especially if you don't have to pay too much.
Yeah.
That's a big bonus for
them. It is. Yeah. It's a big bonus for us as listeners, right. That's for sure.
And, you know, it just reminded me that last month at Stories in the Round, the first 30 minutes or maybe even a little bit longer, 40 minutes of Jim May's set was very much like listening to a stand-up comic.
He was very funny.
He was.
Except they were all stories.
They weren't stories, but they were just one after the other. Very, yes. You know, kind of lots of laughs.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of laughs. So, are we ready to go back?
I am ready.
I know.
Okay. We're doing Ray Bradbury's short story, Old-Fashioned Lime Vanilla Ice, recommended by Jim May.
And we left it just as the male in the story said, I fell off a cliff once and got caught in a tree halfway down.
Oh? When was that?
The falling was long ago. The catching happened just now. She put down her spoon. He reached for her hand, groping, still not turning. What are you doing? You're crying. I saw a swan cry once, and I shan't want to see it again.
A swan?
A woman. You.
But if we were together forever, of course you should see me cry.
No, never. Each tear I would brush away with a gem, a flower, a story, a joke, an enigma, a miracle, or maybe just a goofy face. He made a face so contorted that only seeing half of it, she still laughed.
What if I like a good cry every now and then?
It could just be me.
She laughed again. It was like the tinkle of ice into a glass on a hot day. Are we playing parts in a play?
I don't know, he said.
Neither do I. That's what makes life interesting. Look at me, she whispered, but it was yet a command. He turned slowly, the far side of his face sliding inexorably into view like the waxing of the moon, one tortured crater and ruined meteor strip at a time, his white eye a polar cap, his ear a wormhole into space-time. Her eyes were gray, no green, no blue. Perhaps they were violet. It was like staring at the water over the gunwale of a boat as you floated down a river. Were there flecks of gold there on the bottom? Was that moat a trout and him merely her dream passing by overhead? What happened?
A dragon ate me.
She looked serious. Were you the hero in a fairy tale?
In my years, one thing I have discovered. I am not a hero.
I want to hear that story. She reached over and touched his cheek. He did not flinch, but held her eye.
Today? The first day of summer, with the sun out and the dust dancing in its beams like sand in a wave, the trees rustling like they are breathing, just warm enough for ice cream but not hot. Today you want to hear the story of how a dragon ate me?
She laughed. Don't be dramatic. It didn't eat you. It ate your face. Men fall in love with faces. I even once heard of a silly man who fell in love with a photograph. Women fall in love with men. She moved her hand down and put it on his heart. Is the man in there the same man?
I cannot say. I do not remember the man before. Too quick to stop her, she bent across the table and kissed him full on the mouth, her perfect lips against his ruined ones.
Well, I do, and he is, or one better, and I want to hear that story, but not today. First, I want to hear all of your other stories, one each day in order, like beads on a string or charms on a bracelet, until we get to that day, and then every day until today. I want to drink them up. Your memories, like summer days, stored away to warm me through and through, even in the cold, dark winter days.
Are we bottles of dandelion wine to take down off the shelf and crack open to drink sunshine and cool green shadows? Get drunk on each other, hungover, forget the pain, and do it all over again?
She tilted her head. Or left up high in a dark basement, untouched, save for when it's safe, opened in some ungluttonous twilight to find the pale gold light has rusted to brown and fallen to dust in the bottom of the bottle, we would be mad not to take a sip.
Or mad to do it. You could regret it forever. Drinking is always a bad idea masquerading in a good idea.
Don't wrap your cowardice in pretensions for my well-being.
Such wisdom from youth.
And don't change the subject. They say men are logical, but that is not true. You know what you want, but you argue yourself out of it with honorable-sounding fallacies.
How so?
The only way to know ruined wine is to taste it. If you wait until you're old, then that shadow flavor will never fade, and you will turn it over and over in your mind, regretting it until you die. If you try it when you are young, true, the taste might be bitter, but it would fade over time. Consider, though, what if it wasn't spoiled and instead filled you with so much light that there is no room for any other regrets at all, forever and ever, in this life or the next or the life after that? That is really the question. How could you risk missing that? If not to drink the wine, why did you come back here?
I had no choice. They say you cannot go home again, but that's not true. Home never lets go of you. You become part of the place you are from, body and soul.
Blood and sinew, she replied.
Marrow and bone.
You should be a writer.
I thought I wanted to be a writer. I was never a very good writer, but maybe I was a better writer than I was a man. But I quit, because what do writers do? They invent people and live their lives. I decided to live my life. I am a much better ice cream parlor proprietor.
I just thought, if I am part of that home too, I must be part of you.
He looked at her. The sun in her hair, her even white teeth, when she smiled. Oh, how he wanted to make her smile. To be whole again, to feel that, to be alive. That's why I came home.
To live in the hearts we leave behind is to never die.
He looked down. Your lime vanilla has melted. Do you have time for a cardamom orange licorice spice?
Chianti rose?
With raindrop dew.
In that case, at least a lifetime.
And that was our reading of Old Fashioned Lime Vanilla Ice.
And Jim May told you that that was a very old story, did he?
Yes.
It can't be all that old. Wow. I mean, it's 20th century.
Oh.
Right?
Sure.
Okay. Just checking.
Well, I mean, the setting could be 19th century.
Possibly.
Because there were definitely
ice cream parlors
back before 1900.
Well, I decided another way to describe our theme. Our theme today is ice cream as transition or ice cream as introductions.
Yes. And you know I live next door to an ice cream shop.
I do know that, which I only thought of after I said that.
As we were reading, the shop is really quite quaint.
It is quaint. You know, it's charmingly quaint.
Yes. And not until we read it this time did I think of the shop as the place where it was taking place.
Really?
Yes. Because I actually began to picture them at the table that's near the front door. There is a window there, and just a short step or two to the counter, and easily close enough for someone to say something to a lady who has just gotten her ice cream.
That's true.
And wouldn't have to shout or raise her voice at all. And, boy, if I were a filmmaker, I would want to film this in Nutter's ice cream shop. I would. Only I wouldn't have us do it.
Oh, no, it should be a much younger woman a much craggier man.
Yeah. Well, thank you. That's good. I'm glad I'm not too craggy to, you know, or I'm, you know, not real craggy, I guess. But anyway, I think this is wonderful. If I were teaching or if I were doing drama, as I have over the years, if I were going to cast this, mm-hmm. to do would be a marvelous in a one-act play contest. And I would ask the people who are interested in performing this what they thought about the two characters. You know, did they just meet?
I don't know the answer to that. I pondered that every time I read it through and did not reach a conclusion.
It's so interesting because it could be done so many ways, and just depending on a lot of the, what's the term? I was going to say the timbre of the voices or the inflection, depending on
how, stage directions.
The stage directions, yes. But mostly the vocal, I think, would give a different kind of thing. I think it could be two people who knew each other very well, and she has come back. Or two people who have never seen each other and meet for the first time. And depending on the people performing the words, either way would work, I think.
So are you going to try to stage this at Nutter's Ice Cream?
No, I don't think I could. I can't imagine Miss Doris putting up with that.
It is a very small space.
Yeah. But it would be a neat thing to, if I were to bump into someone who was a videographer, or, you know, it would be something to think about. Might never happen, but could. It's a nice place, you know, nice thought. Anyway, I was glad that Jim mentioned that. I enjoyed doing that.
Yeah, it was fun.
It was fun.
You're listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org.
And if you hear our show mostly on Mondays at noon, and you missed that, or you want to catch up, you can go to talltales.enlightenradio.org. And at that site, there are lots of podcasts of the Storytelling Hour.
Yes, dozens of them.
Yes.
At least 3 years.
Right. Featuring
Fanny Crawford
and Stassi Okowski, and sometimes other guests.
Yes. I've just been thinking about some other guests. I'm going to run by you some names later on after the show.
Oh.
I love having guests.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
And it's easier on the storytellers. Because they fill up some of the hour. We don't have to worry about did we get enough?
Well, Jim May was on 2 weeks ago,
right,
and did a fine job and told some interesting stories, as well as rambled on wonderfully about big issues and things that we should all be thinking about.
And if the airways and the electrons are correct, I have been informed that he's coming back next April.
I did hear a rumor about that.
An interesting rumor.
Yes.
So we have lots of time left in our show today.
Well, I have a little bit of a story. I don't have a story arc particularly, but I have a little anecdote that I'm wondering if I can get to a story from it. Maybe you can help.
I will listen and give you my best advice.
You know how people say that families that eat dinner together do well. They tend to be tend to stay together. Yes. That's a way of building that family feeling, a way of sharing experiences and helping everybody cope with the stresses of modern life, both parents and adults, that everybody gains from the experience of family meals. And I did not pay much attention to that as a kid, but my mother and father orchestrated family meals every single night that I remember when I was growing up. That's not to say they didn't go to lots of meetings and get dinner on the table just in the nick of time, or that we didn't sometimes have pancakes for dinner, things like that. But we did. We had family dinners. And in the summertime, well, really spring through fall, until it got very cold, we would then often go out at least twice a week. By the time I was in high school, we were going at least twice a week to the Dairy Queen. Not very far. It was right near my high school, but that was a good pull, probably a mile and a half to 2 miles from my home. And I did walk that distance to school sometimes by the time I was in high school. But now that seems like such an extravagant thing to do, to have ice cream twice a week, the whole family. But at the time, it just seemed perfectly normal and like a wonderful idea. And we did have, I remember very clearly, we had a limit to the amount of money we could spend. We each got 15 cents. And in the early 1960s or the mid-1960s, that would buy you a small cone dipped in chocolate, or it would buy you a large cone without the dipping in chocolate, or it would buy you a ice cream sandwich or an ice cream popsicle, vanilla with a chocolate coating. Wow. Around the popsicle. And I think by the time I got out of high school, that went up to 20 cents. So we probably had a 20 cent maximum at the very end. And there's some other little pieces that come to me, like my dad always got a cone dipped in chocolate. Every single time. But he didn't like to eat the bottom of the cone because, he said, that's been sitting on the counter where the money goes. So when you put your money down on the counter, not long after that, there might be an ice cream cone set down there, and he didn't want it to be his. So the very bottom of his cone, with no ice cream left in it, he would reach his arm out of the driver's side window and put it up on the top of the car. And we would listen for it as we drove away from the Dairy Queen as it went and rolled across the parking lot.
What an interesting thing. I just immediately reminded me of something from my youth. My high school sweetheart, my high school sweetheart's father was deceased. In fact, I only ever dated one woman whose father was alive in my whole life.
Were you a father figure when you were in high school?
No. Oh, God, no. No. However, this is Jane. You've heard me talk about Jane.
Yes.
And Jane told me about her father. And Jane's mother also told me stories about her father, about how he was extremely frugal, and that when he went to the store, he often went to the grocery store. He, you know, would run errands for his wife when he was home and not working, and he would go to the grocery store. And when he would get half a pound of, say, turkey or bologna or something, you know, sliced at the deli counter, he would say, "Oh no, don't weigh that with the paper under it. I know you keep that top clean on that scale, so put the meat right on the scale. I'm not going to pay extra for the paper." And when she first told me that, I thought it was a joke. But, you know, but then her mother told me, and I thought that was a very interesting thing that, you know, a person would be that frugal and that, like, caring about the money he spent that he didn't want to pay for the paper. And it makes sense because they never said, you know, that it was 50 cents a pound for the bologna plus the paper. So I always thought that was kind of a unique thing. And I always thought that would be such a great scene in a movie, you know, for a guy to really fuss. And it reminded me that when I watched Seinfeld episodes years ago, how much I loved they called him the food Nazi.
Mm-hmm. The soup Nazi.
Soup Nazi, because he ran that store like such a tyrant and would really have a fit over some things. And said, "No soup for you." It always made me think of Jane's dad. So, you know, and I guess we should do a show sometime on parent foibles, not our own.
Of course not.
I mean, things that parents do that especially that kids would notice, you know, things that the parents do and just take for granted. That's part of their, you know, but the, you know, from the point of view of a kid, 6 or 7 year old, staring at their parents doing something and thinking, why are they doing that? But, you know, I used to, when I was a young teacher, I used to preach all the time that families that eat supper together have better students, you know. And I had parents who liked that I did that. But now I would have a hard time, I think, because it's hard to find people sitting down at a table together.
It is. It's very hard.
Who aren't on the phone.
Or watching TV, you know, even.
You know. Yeah. And we don't have kids. My wife and I don't have any children. And so sometimes we do watch TV. We watch the news sometimes while we eat, things mm-hmm. like that. Which tells me that I must have a really good stomach and good constitution. Because watching...
Otherwise you'd have ulcers.
The news is very often frightening. So now...
Well, I did forget to tell one more thing about going to the Dairy Queen.
Sure.
That story. And that was that any time my dad forgot to put the cone end up on top of the roof of the car, my brother or I would say, "Where's the cone? Where's the end of the cone?"
Oh, wow.
And he would say, "Oh, it's right here. It's right next to me on the seat, or it's on the dashboard, or I already put it up there. You missed it."
It must have been the cone that was flat.
The flat cone on the bottom, yeah. Yes.
My first thought when you said cone was, boy.
Yeah, the Dairy Queen didn't even have those pointed cones back then. You could only get the flat kind.
Yeah. Makes me feel a little bit sad because I live next door to an ice cream store. And when we first moved there, my wife and I set up a schedule. Sundays and Wednesdays we would go to the ice cream store. And I'm very predictable. If I like certain things, I'm not very adventurous. So I would get a hot fudge sundae on cherry vanilla ice cream with whipped cream and a cherry, no nuts.
Oh my.
Oh. Just say,
every week? Twice a week?
Twice a week.
Wow.
And
see, I'm still back in the 15-cent limit.
Yes, but you have to remember, at Nutter's, the portions are enormous.
I know.
And the price is...
It's not about the price. It's
very
just
low.
Eating that much. That's like sinful, Stosh.
Believe me, I paid for it. Because just this, starting last January... My doctor said, you need to get some things under control.
Yes.
Because I'm diabetic. And I happen to be married to a very good controller. Terry really is good at schedules, taking over, you know, organizing things. And so we stopped going to get ice cream twice a week. And actually, we almost never go to get ice cream. Some, if we have a guest.
It's part of the experience of Sharpsburg.
Yeah. In fact, when Jim May stayed with us last week or so, he went out for a walk one day, and he went got ice cream. That was part of what he wanted to do. But I just have a little story about this ice cream shop. So about 6 weeks went by after the doctor visit, and we had stopped going to get ice cream. And a woman who opens the shop most mornings and closes it a lot of times, the owner's aunt, said to me, she would sit on the front of the store, and I often have coffee on my front porch. And she said to me one day, "I haven't seen you in the store lately." And I said to her, "Oh, my doctor is concerned about my diabetes, so I have had to cut it out. You know, it's not good for my health." So about a month or so after that, this is like April, after starting in January, and something happened. I don't even remember what it was, but something happened, and it was a good thing in our life. You know, something very positive. And as we were sitting on the front porch, my wife said, "You know what? I think we ought to celebrate. Let's go and get a tiny ice cream cone." You know, they call it a kitty cone, and it's still generous. But and I said, "Oh, good, good, yeah." You know, it wasn't even my idea. So we went in, and Doris that was there, and there weren't many people. We walked in, and I walked up and said, "I'd like a cherry vanilla kitty cone, please." And she said, "No." "What?" And she said, "You told me it was bad for your health. I'm not going to serve you." And this is what happened. Seriously. I turned to my wife and said, "Terry, tell her it's okay." Just like a 5-year-old in that voice. And Terry had to come over and say to the lady, "It's okay. It's we're celebrating, and he just wants a small one, and it'll be all right." And so she did give me the cone. But I keep hearing that voice. I instantly turned into a 5-year-old and looked for the authority figure to help me.
Good so, story.
Yeah. And it's true. It is one of my favorite places.
Nutter's ice cream.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I bring ice cream to the workshop.
I know, sometimes. You do every time. It's really good.
Enjoy it.
I had one last weekend. In fact, I had one each day.
That's always confusing to me. The workshops are, I love the workshops, but they're so confusing to me because there's mostly women in our workshops. And they bring things to share for food for our lunch. And they bring interesting and healthy things, combinations. And a lot of things that I wouldn't eat if I was starving.
You probably would eat them if you were starving.
I'm a fussy eater. I just like the things I like, you know. And so being able to bring mixed nuts or ice cream or both just gets me out of, I don't have to think anymore, you know.
And it's lovely that you do. And I had a lot of both that weekend.
Well, and they're good for you.
They are good for you.
As long as you don't overindulge. So.
I'm trying to think of another ice cream story. And the only thing that comes to mind right this second is, you know, those Neapolitan square blocks.
Yes.
That we used to get. Do they still make those?
They do.
And you can make ice cream sandwiches with them.
Yes. And I have not seen a place where they reach in, get the ice cream out, open the pack, and pull out the two sandwich pieces, whatever that is.
Ice cream crackers, call them.
Like crackers, yeah. big. And then they put that on there, and that used to be so great.
They were never my very favorites, but I was always happy to eat them. We had them at summer camp. That's what I We had ice cream at least once a week, and that's the kind that we had.
For many years, I would get 2 boxes of Klondike.
Oh.
When Terry and I moved to Pittsburgh to take care of her mom, to help her mom, my mother-in-law, Lodi, loved Klondike bars. So, and it was like, wow. Okay, Mom, I'll get your Klondike bar.
One for you and one for me.
Yeah. And that was often a thing I would say. Are you ready for a Klondike? And she would say yes. And of course, I didn't want her to eat it by herself. So I would. And that was before I had to monitor my health so much.
My dad bought, cartons of ice cream at A&P, which was our local grocery store. And he always bought Neapolitan, chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry. It was the only kind he ever bought. But we went to, my mother used to take me to Schraff's because it was around the corner from, I think, Wanamaker's department store in downtown Philadelphia, just off Broad Street. It might have been Gimbel's, but I think it was Wanamaker's. And we would have lunch at Schraff's when we went shopping down there. And I don't remember anything about lunch. All I remember is ice cream. So maybe we had ice cream for dessert. I'm not sure. But she always got butter pecan. And it was years before I ever saw her eat anything except butter pecan ice cream. And that's what I had at the weekend when you brought ice cream for the Jim May workshop. It was very good. But then later in life, she started eating chocolate mint chip ice cream. And I remember how startled I was the first time I saw her eat green ice cream. But that's not butter pecan.
Butter pecan used to be my favorite ice cream. If I got a cone, I would always get it. And today, I would still do that. One of the things, one of my best ice cream stories, I guess, or adventures, was when I got into the United States Army before I turned 18, one of the things I found out, I enjoyed the Army a lot more after basic training. Basic training.
Why am I not surprised?
Most of the things about food and basic training were survival. I ate a lot because we were using calories like crazy. But when I got assigned to a base, my first base was in Texas, and I just loved it that, you know, there you could go back. You could go back. You could get lots of the stuff you liked. And so, and especially ice cream.
That's what I was going to ask you. When you were a good boy,
yeah.
Would your mother have agreed that you were a good boy if she knew you were having a cherry vanilla chocolate sundae twice a week?
I'm not sure. My mother had a sweet tooth.
Oh, so she was sympathetic.
She probably couldn't throw too many rocks. one of my fondest memories as a kid was my mother liked chocolate snowball.
I don't know what that is.
You know what a snowball is, don't you?
A snowball that's made of snow or a snowball that's made of ice cream?
No, not ice cream. Ice. You know, they have the ice machines that grinds the ice.
Oh, we call that water ice in Philadelphia.
Okay. Well, these in Baltimore, they were called snowballs.
Right.
And so my mother often would say to me, I want you to go down and get me a snowball and get yourself one. And so a chocolate snowball with marshmallow on it.
Whoa. So does a chocolate snowball, is it chocolate syrup or is it, it's not like chocolate soda?
No, it's chocolate syrup poured into the ice.
I would rather have ice cream.
Oh, boy, but it was good.
I've never been the only kind of water ice or snowballs that I really like are the lemon ones. All the others are just weird to me.
Yeah. Snowballs used to be a real big deal.
Mm-hmm. And there's one there's a house in Hagerstown off of 81 and Halfway Boulevard that sells snowballs all summer long.
Great.
In the evenings, not during the day.
In the summer, in Baltimore, was a great business. When I taught in Reisterstown, there was a young girl in Reisterstown who put herself through college with a snowball stand. Her parents, wow. Her father built. In fact, I don't know if it was the father. I think it was the brother, because the father was. I think her father had passed away. There's her brother, oldest brother, built her a snowball stand, and she got permission from a private home that she could have her stand set on their grass, you know, and it was a sidewalk. And that traffic on that sidewalk, there was a school with 1,200 kids.
No,
about the trick. About half a mile away, and most of those kids didn't ride any school buses. And she had really good prices, and she opened up as soon as school was over. And her mom didn't have to pay a penny for her education.
Brilliant.
Bought her own clothes and paid for a college education with that.
That is brilliant.
That was wonderful. And I was told that she, what do you call that like a McDonald's? Oh, franchise. She franchised that stand to one of her brothers.
The next generation.
You know? She made him pay a franchise fee.
Good for her.
I thought that was wonderful. I think we've used our time.
I think we did.
Why don't you take us out?
Huh. Okay. Well, you've been listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. I am your departing co-host, Fanny Crawford.
And I'm not sure what that means.
I'm not dying. I'm just leaving for the rest of the week.
Okay. Well, yeah.
Okay. We're broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. We're an independent community radio bringing you storytelling. We offer listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand our own stories. Thanks for listening. And next up,
to be determined.
To be determined. Okay. We'll be talking next week. Bye-bye.